Welcome back to another episode of Cogumentative, where men with penchants for the 80s and flip up headlights and tequila will park cars.
I like that.
Yeah, you like that?
Yeah, especially. Especially today.
Exactly. Guys, how have you all been? It's been a while since we've all been in one studio together.
Yeah, we've been well.
Which is weird because we've actually all been in town. I think it's been because the producer just left
us. I think it's
left
producer
us.
Scott's fault.
Yeah.
It is, actually. Scott's been off. He's been holidaying in Montreal and Quebec and, I don't know, all these places.
They all sound so French.
Yeah, French.
I don't know. Actually, Montreal sounds very Alfa Romeo.
Actually, no, not Montreal. I like Toronto.
You sat in Montreal 2 days ago.
I did.
How was that?
Very, very cool. I do like me a Montreal. I thought it was like a Lamborghini at first because, you know, it's same designed by the same guy. What's his name?
Gandini.
Marcello Gandini.
Gandini.
Yeah, there we go. You guys know Italians.
Yes, we do. And you've been intimate with a couple of Italians recently?
I have, actually. I have. But we'll talk about that later. Guys, we're going to touch on some news because there's always like stuff happening in the car world. And something that got me kind of semi-excited today was the announcement of the Ford Bullitt Mustang is coming to SA, which I think is like the Mustang to have.
No, I mean, and we've just got to explain that you are a racing driver and you drive a
Mustang,
and you race it. So, I mean, I understand your attachment to it. But, I mean, in reality, they all look the same.
Well, you actually have to also give it a bit of context. So, the Bullitt Mustang, because of the original Bullitt Mustang in the movie Bullitt.
Yeah, well, okay. So
Steve McQueen.
Yeah. So
Steve McQueen.
So, there is context because, like, that film got me into Mustangs. And it, like, introduced me into this whole world of American cars. Like, I didn't know what Chargers were and stuff like that. I didn't really actually know what the Mustang was back. Like, so when I...
Where did you live? You didn't know that?
I lived in Melville. No, I'm talking...
But it's widely regarded as the best chasing of all time.
Well, it's like the godfather of... It invented the whole, you know, like, the real gritty, you know, hands-on car chasing. And, I mean, I watched this film back... Must have been 2000 or 99. I remember I watched it after a 94.7 like cycle challenge back in the day. And I was just like, wow, this is really cool. These are cars that I don't know anything about. And that got my godfather interested in American cars again. And then he ended up buying the Mustang. And
nice.
Now I'm racing it.
So and tell me about this Bullitt Mustang. Is it the same as the standard 5-liter Mustang?
So it's basically the 5-liter V8 coupe, and it comes with a couple of engine tweaks.
Oh,
So it's got a performance exhaust. It's got the same It's got the same intake manifold as the GT350, which is quite cool.
Oh, that had a flat plane crank. Anoraki, sorry.
Is it really?
Yeah. No, was it that 350 had the Ford GT motor, I think.
It's a proper engine. It's really, really
good. No, the previous Ford GT motor. Oh, I don't know.
Anyway,
it had a flat plane crank motor, which is very Ferrari.
Has everyone seen Bullitt, though?
Yeah, I have.
I haven't, actually.
Well, we can
see the chase scene.
I've seen the chase scene.
Yeah, we've all seen the chase
scene. I mean, like, the thing about, like, McQueen movies, it seems that they are just, they're sort of like porn movies. Where, like, the dialogue is limited, but the action is phenomenal.
It's all about the cars.
It actually is.
It's all about
the ones that we watch, anyway.
So, basically, going back to this Mustang.
And the price point?
To be confirmed, it's only going to be available here in limited numbers.
Okay. And it's in green only.
No, but, yeah. So
It
comes in Highland green, but you can get it in black as well, which kind of defeats the whole
purpose. No, it's a Bullitt car. So the original Bullitt car was, what, Highland green?
Highland green. But you can also get this in black, which is silly.
No, that's silly.
I must admit, I saw one in Atlanta there. I was there in January, February.
A Bullitt?
Yeah, an actual Bullitt. It was on the stand at a car show. But I just don't get... They all look similar. I mean,
they do.
Like, why don't you just go and buy a cheap 5-liter.
But now, you've just said it. Like, I want to tell people I have a Bullitt.
Yeah, it's cool. Like, that's a Bullitt Mustang. I've always liked them. I mean, they've had these editions since...
It's a cool name for a car.
Since the 90s.
Don't look at him like that. I'm allowed Mark's, to... Mark, you the American car
no, no, I've said
fan.
No, I'm said I'm going to have an American car at some point, but it won't be a brand new Bullitt Mustang. It's like... Yeah.
Anyway. Mark's looking at me because he wants some confirmation of what he's trying to say.
So just to give it some context, because I'm the contextualizer. A Ford, a Mustang is a Ford. Let's start there.
Oh, did we not say that at all?
We didn't say that at all. A Mustang is a Ford.
Yeah.
And
it's not a Chevrolet.
It's not a Chevrolet. So it's a blue collar American legend of a car. They've made millions of them.
Mm. Yeah.
This Bullitt edition is pays homage to the movie car. Okay, so it's got special wheels, it's got the same color as the movie car from the movie Bullitt with Steve McQueen, and so there's a lot of hype around it. But in the end, it's just a special edition with nothing particularly special.
Engine
you can springs. Get a little bit of this, a little bit of that. There's a huge aftermarket anyway for them. Just buy probably half the price for a one-year-old used 5-liter V8 Mustang from your Ford local Ford. And enjoy the legend, you know. Why do you need to pay?
You know what I want to ask is, how coincidental is it that they found the original Bullitt Mustang at the same time as the release of this car?
Well, they've been trying to find it for a long, long time, and they've had previous Bullitt editions in the previous Mustangs. Okay. So going back to like the 90s Mustang. So
it's quite an interesting story. It came up that Steve McQueen sold the car to a dude who left it to his son.
Mm.
And his son left it hidden away for years. And then, coincidentally, at the same time as the launch of this new Bullitt Mustang, said, oh, I have the original. And now it's been touring with the Mustang, the Bullitt Mustang.
I mean, we know that this is it's shameless hype, and they're like doing this thing to make it look
sells
like
cars.
Yeah, so why would you not go and buy a secondhand 5-liter for $500,000 and wrap go and wrap it. Like, why would you not do that?
In other words, the Bullitt Special Edition is not special enough.
Yeah.
It was more about being a Mustang.
It's probably
a Mustang first and a Bullitt second.
Our friend Jacques
second.
Would tell you that it's a numbered car, and that makes it special.
Oh, well, he's got a
Works
GP,
though. Shout out to our
though.
Friend Jacques.
Yeah, and he's got a Works GP, a Mini Cooper Works GP, which is a numbered car, and it has the actual number on the roof.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, on the outside.
In case it gets hijacked. Okay, so let's talk about something that's more special than a Bullitt Mustang. And this is something that Nadav told us about. Porsche 930, the Widowmaker. You've got one.
I do.
Yeah.
Drive it today.
Very nice. You said that they're now bringing some company. I don't know what the name is.
Oh.
Okay, so right. I know what you're talking about now. So the reason that this is news, in my opinion, is because the combination of facts here is so outrageous that it sounds like fantasy. I cannot believe that this story is real, because there's too many things that just seem too fantastical to put it all together into a real event. Okay, so starting out at the beginning, it's a Porsche, okay? It's a Porsche 911, and it's a Porsche Turbo, sort of from so-called late 70s. The famous Porsche Turbo, which is the Widowmaker, which everyone was so scared of because it was so boosty and killed lots of people by going backwards into hedges. That's the one, okay? It's the one from the 80s that you recognize with the wing.
Which standard had how many horsepower?
200 and...
No. The original, the non-intercooled one, was 260. The second generation, the 3.3, which is the one I've got, 300 horsepower. But by inference, I am I'm like a medallion man. I mean, I drive this thing.
Yes,
and
no, you're very
80s. I haven't crashed it.
You are very 80s. And it hasn't crashed, and we've all driven it, I think.
No,
and
I haven't.
It isn't as bad.
It's lovely.
Right. Well,
lovely.
Thomas needs
overdrive.
He's
sort of driven it.
So anyway, so a company called Lanzante, and they are very, very interesting. They do all kinds of very interesting things with very, very expensive cars. So if you've got an exceptionally expensive limited edition car and you want it more special, you'll take it to Lanzante. And what they've done is they've somehow secured 11 old McLaren tag engines.
Yeah.
Or tag engines from a McLaren.
Tag Porsche.
Yeah, tag Porsche.
Which were actually made by Porsche.
Yeah, they were.
And they were old one. They were 1.5 turbo Formula
V6s.
1 engines.
V6s.
Which is at odds with a normal 911, which is a flat 6.
Yes. So it's an actual Formula One engine.
Rebuilt by Williams.
Okay.
I found that out today. They were all these 11 engines have been rebuilt by Williams.
Where did they have 11 tag engines living? Why would they choose to recreate something with a tag engine in?
It's unbelievable. It'll be a much more drivable car, thinking about it. It'll have a lot more power, But think about this. The weight of that engine is going to be substantially lower than what the 3.3 turbo that it would be based on would be, and it'll be a lot more balanced. But just a little bit of trivia here that see if everyone knows. So this is Tag of Tag Heuer fame. Mm. Does anyone in the room know what Tag stands for?
Oh, yeah.
Technic.
I don't know. God. Tell us, Mark.
Technic d'avant-garde. Yeah.
Okay.
We didn't do too bad. So this motor,
not bad. I feel bad that I doubted you guys. Actually,
so this motor has, have you mentioned it? 700 horsepower, as opposed to 300 that it used to have.
Yeah.
In qualifying spec or race spec?
In qualifying spec, those things were pushing out 1500, but they were grenade engines.
So we're not expecting longevity out of the motor unless they turn boost down.
No. 700's like. We run that forever.
Yeah. But maybe I still don't know that we've quite contextualized this. Because to take at what's essentially a piece of gold, which is an old Formula One engine, okay? These things on their own, a Formula One engine that has raced, and these engines have all been raced, is worth a hell of a lot of money. It's a piece of history.
Yeah, but it's
and now
static.
They're rebuilding
How
them.
How cool that they're putting it in
it's
something.
It's amazing. I mean,
it is
who
amazing.
Thought of this?
It is amazing. This
a bizarre project.
And this thing ain't going to be cheap.
Huh? So another fun fact.
They put pricing out.
Another fun fact is the motor that you get would have been an X-Racing motor. So you're at the back of a 911, if you open the boot where the engine lives.
The engine boot.
It's got gold stickers.
Yes.
And those gold stickers normally tell you things like tire pressure and...
Valve clearance. Which is completely wasted.
Things you really don't want to know or need to know. And now it tells you what races your engine won.
And who drove it.
So
Rosberg,
how
Christ.
Cool.
Yeah.
Just an amazing project. I don't know where it came from. I don't know who came up with it.
But I tell you, it reminds me a little bit of at the Goodwood Festival of Speed. There was it seemed like just like an E36 BMW 3 Series, but it had
a dolphin shape.
Dolphin shape. It had a Formula One engine in it, and it sounded
absolutely
ridiculous. And actually, when I was looking at the pictures and I saw this thing going up the hill, I thought, why would they have that? I mean, it looked like a touring car or something, but the thing had an actual Formula One engine.
So let's put a price tag on this thing. So a nice 930, we're looking at between 2.5 and 3 million rand.
Mm,
not that much.
Not as much.
One and a half and two million.
One and a half to three, depending on like
condition. So that's your base car that you give Lanzante. Is that what they're called?
Mm-hmm.
Then you got to buy your Formula One engine. Hazard a guess. I don't know. What's
one of
called?
11.
One of 11 that won world championships.
And then rebuild it from the ground up.
The thing about it, I mean, I'd like to know like a little bit more about those engines, because it was widely known that those engines, in qualifying trim, they used to call them grenade engines. Mm. So in those days, you could take a Formula One engine, and it literally had to last just for one qualifying run, which was literally an out lap, one flying lap, and an in lap. Mm. They used to push out 1,500 horsepower out of 1.5 liters, and they literally would destroy themselves if you ran it for any longer. Now, they used to strip those engines down at the end of every single race. I mean, they even had a T car, so if the guy binned it during qualifying, could run back to the pits, get into another fully specced race car, and set up for him. And it was always controversial because it was always set up for the faster driver.
Could we say that this is happily a $1 million car?
It has to be.
Yeah,
I can't see it being.
It has to be.
I mean, crazy, but what a thing. I mean, an idea.
Would you buy it over a 959?
I think I would.
You'd have this over anything. Just
what an amazing project.
I'm not sure I would, eh?
No, it's going to be amazing.
It's too compromised. I mean, I love the engine. And
it's got roof wheels.
I'm sure we could find something else to put it in.
Yeah, roof wheels.
But like maybe a Formula One car.
Well, the original had roof wheels.
Thomas is searching for a segue.
I'm searching for a segue. Look, it's safe to say that none of us will ever be able to afford one.
Why is that safe to say?
Well, you know.
I don't think so.
But what we
could swap our entire collections.
What
and still not afford one.
Yeah.
What we could afford and what might be coming out is Tesla Kila, and you'll like that. Elon Musk is bringing out his own tequila,
which I mean
Tesla Kila.
I mean, I for one can honestly appreciate that.
Yeah.
I mean, but look, also you got to feel for the guy. He's looking for work, and you know what?
he's looking for work,
and at least he's resourceful. He's resourceful.
Tesla Kila, a real thing.
Yes. Tesla Kila. Yeah.
He's bringing out tequila.
Do you think it's going to be better than the Gas Monkey Cinnamon Tequila?
I don't know about
that. I think
this.
So.
But I mean, he threatened to bring out a flamethrower before, and he did
bring out a flamethrower, and he did
it. So there's no reason to believe that we won't get Teslaquila very, very soon.
He relaunched spaceships, so yeah.
I think it's awesome. You
can do just about anything.
I think it's awesome. Guys, that's it for news. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about living vicariously. Welcome back to Cargumentative. And last week we had an interesting, you know, sort of swap out, Mike and myself. Mike gave me his million dollar Lamborghini Diablo.
I wouldn't say $1 million, but
well,
yeah.
You know, and in exchange for his generosity, I gave him my Daihatsu Materia Turbo, which is, you know,
Daihatsu Materia Turbo,
a much coveted.
If you're listening to this, push pause and Google that stuff.
Yeah. So I mean, like, it was like those movies, like where they do body switches. So like we got to, like,
yeah,
we got to live each other's lives.
So how did this happen? I mean, did you guys put your keys in a bowl and?
Yeah, pretty much. So I just phoned up. So, you know, I came to the office and the fashion girls were hanging around and they were having a cadenza.
They said,
yeah, and they said, listen, we've got a big problem on our hands. We have a photo shoot coming up and we need a car. And I said, okay. I can maybe help you out. What do you want? They said.
Did you first think about your Daihatsu?
No, I didn't. Oh, because good. I know nobody wants to take photographs of that car except me. Anyway, so I said, you know, what do you want? And they said, we want something dramatic and something that can, you know, photograph well. So I said, I know a man, and I know a man with some amazing cars. And I phoned up Mike and I said, listen, what do you have? What can I use? He said, Diablo.
No, actually, I didn't.
What did you say?
I said. The 308, because the 308 really is sexy.
It's a Ferrari. For those who don't know, it's not a Peugeot.
Yeah.
It is a Ferrari 308.
Thanks for clarifying that. It's an important clarification.
It's the one from Magnum PI.
Oh, yeah.
Which, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's got, yeah, I mean, it's infamous for that. But it's just so sexy and voluptuous. And
a Peugeot 308.
Unlike
the 307 was actually quite a nice car, though.
It actually was. As was the 206.
Indeed. We're getting sidetracked.
We've had owned one of each.
But when I sent through the picture, I said you could the 308 or the Diablo, and the girls just asked for the Diablo.
The girls just want. It was like, you know, that's it. There's no. There was no arguing. There was no. It was just like, we want the Diablo. So I was like, cool, Mike, can have the Diablo? Absolutely, you can. So I rocked up at his house. We did the swap, and off I went into the night. In this loud
with quite a hairy man in the car. I'm saying, like,
yeah, who was that man?
Nick.
Oh, it was that man.
Oh, that man.
Yeah. Was that man? That
Thomas man. Thomas has a man in most of his photos.
In my life.
In his life. Yeah. Well.
Anyway, so he thought it was outrageous. He'd never been in one before, and off we went, and we parked it at the office. And then the following day, I picked it up, went to do a quick TV shoot with Ignition, and then ended up in this reserve out in the south, where this model arrived. From Cape Town, and she soon stripped down to a bikini and a one piece and various items of swimwear. Of course, I saw everything.
Sounds interesting.
Because there's not a lot of places to hide out in the south in the game reserve, you know? So items of clothing were swapped all the time, and I saw things. I was like, whoop, I'm terribly sorry. I didn't mean to see that. And she's like, no, it's fine. You know, don't worry about it. In my line of work, people see everything anyway.
Hashtag me too.
Yeah. And it was kind of cool. I felt like this kind of playboy, like a rich playboy in the early 90s, which
I see where you're going with
which
this.
Most Diablo drivers were, you know.
So what you were doing is you were living vicariously through Mike.
Correct.
So in other words, that's what Mike's daily life must be like.
Exactly, especially when the
models, swimsuits.
Yeah. Mike, can you confirm this?
I can't deny. I can't confirm. Whether that car's been used for any shoots with models.
Models, yeah.
Never. Thomas, tell us what, you know, your very quickly, your impressions of the Diablo as a professional motoring journalist.
As a professional motoring journalist, well, you know, I'm not, as you guys know, I'm not really that big on Italian cars, but if I had to choose a mark, it would be Lamborghini. I just like them because they're kind of anti-Ferrari. They've always been up in their grill. And the Diablo is just so cool. It's just like, it's such an outrageous car. in the way it looks and the way it sounds, and you get into this thing and you just start grinning. You're like, this is outrageous. Like, I shouldn't be in this car. It's just like, it's offensive. You know,
you can't be discreet.
And actually, it's the first time I really heard it from the outside.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I heard it, and I listened to it go down the road and didn't realize how far you can hear it from.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just one of those cars. People go nuts for it, you know. I mean, I was going down the highway and people were hanging out at the car windows with their camera phones trying to get photographs, and people coming up and saying, can I sit in it? Can I touch it? can I caress it?
Mike has become Insta-famous.
Yeah, and I was like, yeah, sure, go for it. And it kind of just brings out the
Which we're going to discuss very, very shortly.
You know, it kind of brings out that childlike like mania that people have when they're young and
they get excited about seeing something different.
Yeah, and it is, and you know, from my point of view, from driving it, I found it very exciting, you know, because it has this noise. Mike's car has a 2B exhaust on it, and I went under that M2 underpass, the flyover, you know. Yeah. So there's a lot of concrete. There's plenty of surfaces to like rebound noise off. And I was just in second gear, going from like 2,000 up to 5.5, coming off, hearing things popping and buzzing.
The crazy thing about that car is, how fast does it go in first gear?
Yeah.
100 k's an hour.
100 kilometers an hour.
How it does 0 to 100 in 4 seconds. It's just, it was at a time when all they were doing is trying to get good statistics. So it's geared, it's a 5-speeder, so it does 100 in first, and then it'll do 330 k's an hour in fifth. So the gears are just ridiculously spaced.
But so cool.
Yeah.
But so cool.
What
and
a cool thing.
And still properly fast. I mean, I've driven a lot of older sports cars, supercars, and when you compare them to newer stuff, they kind of don't really feel that fast. But this Diablo, when you're up in like third gear, fourth gear, and you floor it, it's properly quick.
How many horsepower?
It's
500.
It really pulls. I mean,
but it's a truck. It's a truck. I mean, it's a proper challenge to drive.
It is.
But I really want to talk about my day.
So how was
not
it?
Not in a narcissistic way.
What was it
but
like?
Actually, like, I really want to talk about.
So remember
like
swap
the
cars.
Swap.
Yeah.
Mark, what was it like being Thomas for a day?
So Thomas arrived at me, and actually, I've been listening to him about his Materia. Now, this is a very, very rare car. So the Diablo, they only made 2,800 of them over all the variants. Mm. But this Materia, they only made 40 of. Now, the Materia is sort of like one of the
Materia Turbo.
The Materia, no, but the Materia is one
they
of
made
the
a lot
early,
more than 40
early
Materias,
MPVs, though. Like multi-purpose vehicles. So this thing looks a bit like Postman Pat's van, but it's white, and it has a vent on the front, which is apparently not straight, and was problematic for
it's
the
asymmetric.
Ladies. It was asymmetric, but it was problematic for the, or as the ladies at the office said, it's skew. Now, I gave this thing the, I really wanted to see what this thing was like. So I took it in the morning, and the first thing that I noticed that was that I was getting up into quite a high car. But it's quite cool because the dash is actually really cool. It's got this like wraparound thing, and the speakers like face you almost to provide like a sound stage, and it's all set up nicely, and there's a Momo steering wheel.
Correct.
So you start this thing up, and from the get-go, the interesting thing is that it's got this turbo motor. So it absolutely is like engrossing in that it makes this popping sound as the pop-off valve goes, and it goes in every single gear. It's driving with the window open. So now, I drove it. I'm not going to talk too much about the actual drive, because what I actually realized is that it's a Q car. So I got next to a guy, got next to a guy in a Focus Fiesta ST, and I thought to myself, should I have a go with this guy? And the only problem was is that he just didn't realize that he was racing me. But I mean, apart from that,
he didn't realize
that this thing
he
actually
didn't realize he was having a race.
Damning with faint praise.
Yeah, but he lost. He lost.
You won.
But he lost.
Race that the other guy didn't know he was having.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
So I'm still not sure if it would have beaten it. But having said that, so we worked out that it's actually quite entertaining in a straight line.
Yeah.
Then I put it in a corner, and I worked out that actually, like, even though it's got drum brakes on the back and I expected it to oversteer, it's actually really benign. And like, I tried to provoke it, took it through some corners where I normally go, and you can normally get a car to change its pitch in the corner, so to get it to oversteer a little bit by jumping off the throttle, maybe touching the brake a little bit. The thing was completely benign. And don't I must admit, from that perspective, I had a problem with it. And I think they could actually make it into a much better driver's car if they sorted out the suspension. I mean, maybe just like make the rear tires just ridiculously hard.
For our listeners, I've described the car before and how it looks. It looks like a washing machine with four giant wheels at each corner, which might explain why it just doesn't do anything when you turn it around a corner.
Okay, so that now we're getting into the meat of things, because I got to the office. Now, I'm very fortunate in that I drive a different car to work every day, and normally it's like a 2-week rotation, 10 different cars, and they're always something quite special. And even if it's something that's like a little bit not to everyone's tastes, like the BMW M Coupe, or like today, the 928 that I took. It's always something a little bit interesting. And as I arrived at the office, one of the prettiest girls at the office was there. And she literally burst out laughing, took out her camera phone, and took a photo of me.
All time low.
I then got out and I just called her superficial. So I did defend Thomas Falconer's honor.
Oh, that's awesome.
Went inside, but when I came out, two other pretty girls were actually in the by the car, and that was where the comment about the skew vent on the bonnet, and whilst in car terms we all know that there was a car named the Ferrari bread van, which is a very evocative 60s racer. She called it a bread tin. And actually, I'm not sure she meant bread van. I think she meant bread tin.
She did.
Yeah.
So The day came to an end. Tom arrived at my house. I heard the thing coming. I heard him try to slow down for the speed bump, whack the front, which he was worried had taken the whole front bumper off. And we sat next to the fire having a beer.
Yeah.
But I'm very grateful that I've got to grips with the Materia. And I must admit, I actually notice Materias on the road now.
Are there others?
Yep. But then,
so an absolute all round success.
They're not pretty. No, it was a successful day. At least we both have context.
Exactly. And now know what it feels like.
What happened on Instagram, Mark? Did you post any
pictures? Oh yeah. So actually, I posted some pictures on of the Materia, and I really wanted to show that I was like a proper car guy. Yeah.
The word you used was bloodbath.
It was a bloodbath. I lost like 10 followers, in a morning. But I immediately, Tom sent me some photos from the shoot of the Diablo, put them up, got like 12 back.
Exactly. Well, that's what I had as well. Like, as soon as I started posting Lamborghini pics, I probably gained about 5 or 6 followers.
Really?
It was brilliant. Really? Just what I needed. Diablo. An instant boost.
I want to ask you, it's not a coincidence, is it, that soon after, and this is going to be devastating to the three female listeners, but you actually found a girlfriend soon after the Diablo.
No, before the Diablo.
But you told her you were getting a Diablo.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, then maybe secured it for a few more days.
Exactly.
Yeah, interesting. So you guys, Nadav, Mark, you guys haven't done any car swapping, have you?
Well, we did.
Yeah.
Today only.
Yeah, a less successful swap today.
No, not nearly as exciting.
So Aston Martin V8 Vantage, which is Mark's, swapped for
with broken doors. I'll add
those doors are
working
doors.
Working now, Mark, you have
beautiful
doors.
Swan doors.
They're not
doors.
Supposed
they're
to open
like
properly.
Swan.
They're British.
British stuff never works. I don't know
exactly.
Why.
Swan doors.
It's
swan
like
doors.
Alphas. You just expect stuff to
if
go wrong.
Yeah, if you swap try and sell, if you try and sell that car, people are going to think there's a problem.
They do not break. They are fantastically well.
So we swapped Mark's elegant tailored suit 007 for the working class sports car. He took my 911 Carrera for the day.
It's too early to tell anything.
It's too early to tell. I love the Aston Martin. Its V8 has just the most exquisite noise. Mark's taken out both the offending fuse. From the fuse box, which makes the exhaust loud at all times, and also taken out his rear parcel shelf of late, which makes it even louder.
Which you need to do. Have you done it yet?
I definitely need to, but that thing's got so many warning lights at the moment.
Yeah. What a
low
lovely,
brake pads,
lovely,
low
lovely
ignition
thing.
Control requirements. Needs
exactly
a service.
The same. He drove mine today, dropped it off with the lights on. Same
so,
light.
So irritating.
But yeah, lovely thing.
Lovely, like absolutely cool lovely, special thing, and relatively affordable, actually. So special considering how
biggest bargain you can get at the moment. They're $500,000. Buy them now.
There you go, listeners. Top tip. It's our first top tip. Woo!
That is actually it's the first
special sound.
It's the first valuable piece
consumer
of
advice.
Consumer advice we get on this. Don't go out and buy a Golf R.
Yeah.
Use the same money.
But go out
but
and
buy the manual. Buy the manual and find one advantage. Where they've done the clutch and hopefully the brakes.
Yeah.
And you should have free motoring for a long time.
But even then, brakes aren't very expensive to do. They're actually not expensive cars to run.
Aren't they actually off a Ford Mondeo?
No, they're not. They're Brembo brakes. They're not off a Mondeo.
Okay.
They're off a Range Rover Sport, but that's besides the point. Yeah. Mark doesn't know yet that the pads are not available.
Oh, no, I've been told. We have found alternatives.
Okay. Well, there you go. Consumer advice for a change and car argumentative.
So we'll find out soon what the career is like for Mark.
Yeah, we will.
So far, lovely.
Mm. Okay. Well, you guys chew on that, and we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to chat about what a car says about you. Welcome back to the show. In this segment, we're going to chat about, well, we're going to have a debate. And it might be a little bit of a tricky one. And the debate is, what does a car say about you?
Yeah.
What is the car you drive? And you present to the world, say about you.
So this comes up often, you know. For example, you meet someone new and you want to know what kind of personality they have.
Mm.
I personally look at the car they drive because I believe that your car says a lot about the kind of person you are. Think about how much of the money you spend every month you spend on your car. When you want to choose that car, how much time you think of what kind of car you would need. It has to suit your lifestyle. It has to fit into your family situation. It has to fit your budget. So there's a lot we can talk about.
There is.
But also, but my question before we start out is, are we not overestimating how much people think about the cars that they buy? In other words, to make an association here, is it not dangerous?
Yeah,
do people not just buy cars?
No.
Whatever.
No, but that also
there's a Toyota around the corner from my office. So I'll just buy one.
Well, that person doesn't like cars.
Right.
And if you don't like cars, it also can be said, and this is controversial, you don't like driving. And if you don't like driving, you're probably not very good at it.
Mm.
Because you generally like the stuff you're good at.
Yeah, well, I just want to ask you guys, can we for once, can we just be a little bit controversial?
Like, we have to.
Can we be absolutely judgmental?
Yeah, of course you can.
I'll join you, Mark.
What do you mean?
You can be very judgmental.
You can also be judgmental.
I mean,
judgmental.
You should be, I'm saying. Please feel free to.
No, I'm saying you can be most judgmental.
So let's pick a car.
Especially when it's an Alpha 4C, but I mean, I'm not going to go there tonight.
I can't believe you mentioned it again.
He'll fit into every podcast. So let's pick a car and then decide what kind of person drives that car.
Okay, I've got the initial
go,
one.
Go.
Okay. 2 Series. Here's the question. Does it come, when you buy a 2 Series, does it come with a vape and a tattoo voucher?
Absolutely,
you see,
it does.
Exactly my point. So
if you've
drive
been to Greenside lately,
then
and you've parked outside, I don't know what it's called now, Cafe Sophia or something,
you
see many 2 Series there.
With the window cracked slightly.
And lots of vaping.
And vaping coming out of the... Yeah, absolutely. And...
Yeah.
Can you buy a 2 Series without having the 3M stripes on the grill?
No.
I don't think it's
possible. You can't. It's like you have to do it. As soon as you sign for that car, a man goes around the corner and
fits your stickers.
And he fits the stickers.
Or the stickers
on.
Or the like press on
I don't
press
know.
On thingies.
But why are you obliged to wear slip slops and socks if you have an M2?
Slip slops and socks.
Yeah.
If you drive an M2,
yeah.
I've never seen that.
Or a 2 Series.
It's normally just
it goes
like
with the vest and the tattoos and the vape.
It's normally like those
that's
baggy,
so judgmental.
Those baggy tracksuit pants, which looks like someone's made a poo in them. So the crotch is like swaying.
This is not working out, guys. I think we'll have to tone it down.
I think that this. So you may not decide for yourself what it says, but actually inadvertently, you're telling people a whole lot.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's like Golf GTIs and Golf Rs.
Best car in the world?
Golf Rs particularly, they just scream out, douchebag. You just know the guy's going to be like up in your grill, slightly aggressive, enjoys a bit of CrossFit. You know, he's like a main man.
What's wrong with CrossFit?
Nothing, but he's like, you know,
he says the man who owns a 4C.
Yeah, it's kind of, you just know, like, if you crashed into his car and he got out, you know exactly who it's going to be.
We get the point. Who wakes up in the morning and goes, I'm so excited, I'm going to buy a Toyota today?
Me, I would.
Yeah,
like
he would, and that's the thing. And actually, his car, and what we didn't mention actually in the last in summary around,
I know
the
what
material,
you're going to say. One
is
word.
That it is
ironic.
Exactly, it is literally the most ironic car in the entire world.
Yeah.
The problem.
I don't think everyone buys it.
So Tom said, does that make him a hipster? I said no, because it only works if other people. I think it's ironic as well.
Exactly,
but. And it's absolutely true though, because I think some people might choose their cars for a sense of irony, like me. Okay, so hold on. If
you
I
do it for irony,
yeah. So look,
to be ironic.
Listen to me. I'm a car guy. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I love cars. I write about cars. I race cars.
So you love cars.
I love cars. Okay, but there's a like a nice sense of irony in owning a car
that everyone doesn't
that
like.
Car guys will think, "What the hell are you doing?" So it's gone through my mind before where I thought about trading in the Materia to get a Mark III Toyota Prius.
No, stop it.
And seriously.
Wait, so basically what you're saying is the Materia is terrible, but you own it because you want people to think Thomas is a journalist.
He wants to have this element of irony. Only thing is, this is around, it's got to be contextual. So this is around your group of mates because they know if you were to come back home with like a 2 Series, they know that you'd just be taking the piss out of people from Germany.
Even if you liked a 2 Series, you couldn't own one.
I just would not own a 2
you
Series.
You wouldn't.
I wouldn't. It's not my
do
thing.
Do you think when you go and buy a Toyota,
they
put a red bow on the car?
No, because
they don't even care.
They
just tell you it's around the back. Go and fetch it.
And you'll say, but what does it look like? How will I know it's mine?
It's like an Avis parking lot.
It's white.
You go and you push the button until your indicators go off. And that's how you know which car you've just bought.
Yeah.
It's like losing the lottery.
But, you know, I think. I think a lot of people try too hard because they're trying to be car people and they're like, what should I buy? What should I get?
No, they just like cars and they're not journalists who are blessed to be able to drive different cars every day.
Yeah.
So when they want a car, they buy the car that they love. So it says a lot about people.
Maybe, yeah, for sure. Look,
yeah, let's go to another one.
So interesting. So I was with this guy. We actually went to a wedding in Katlehong, and we had to go for like a little bit of a run to go get beer, and
like a physical run or a car?
No, this was a car run.
Okay.
But it was quite cool actually. So we went into this VW up, and I've never been in one before. So
great car.
I was quite interested.
I like it.
No, but how cool is this one? So I got into it, and it actually was a Beats version.
Yeah, those are awesome with the sound system and the graphics and the stuff.
Absolutely, and it's got like a bit upgraded sound system. In fact, they've taken the spare wheel out.
Yeah,
and
put
a sub in there, and they give you a get home canister.
I think that's cool.
And there's tire pressure monitors on it.
Yeah,
but it was just quite cool. So actually, I was just thinking the guy who had it, like the fact that he had an up, and it looked pretty cool from the outside. The second that I knew that it was a Beats version, like immediately, like knew that he was probably a little bit of a muso and like a little bit more
exactly
dynamic. He wasn't just commuting.
I believe you can tell a lot about a person from the car they drive. Audi A4. Who drives Audi A4s?
Accountants.
That's awful.
BMW 3 Series? Sales rep.
Sales rep, 100%.
C-Class Merc? Dentist.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's a mate of mine.
What do lawyers do?
Hold on a second. There's a mate of mine who's got a few cars, and apparently he's thinking about getting a C-Class Merc. And apparently it's you.
No, that's a lie. Michael would never do that.
Let's put the cart before the horse for a minute. So you drive around Johannesburg, and there's can we agree that there's lots of 1 Series?
Yeah.
1 Series is a... Okay.
Let's agree.
Yeah,
that do you see a fair amount of 1 Series as a dagger? How do you end up buying a 1 Series?
You want a
but
BMW?
I think a 1 Series is great.
No, really? 1 Series means you like cars,
yes,
but you can't afford a 3 Series. So you buy... You buy the brand you want
to
get into.
That's all it is. It's
brand.
It's totally goes back to the brand. People want the brand. They want the BMW Roundel. They want the Audi rings. It's why cars like the Passat and the Arteon will never sell, even though they're
good
fantastic cars.
But, wrong badge.
But nobody's going to buy them because they don't have a BMW badge. So a 1 Series is
I wouldn't say wrong badge.
It's
a
like,
brilliant badge.
What are you talking about?
Best cars in the world.
You two actually, and I'm looking at Nadav and Mark here, just the amount of judgment that they put out this week about the Kia Stinger, both
awful.
Tom and I
awful.
Think is made.
Yeah.
But the problem with the, is
with,
just simply
with you people.
It's just a, yes, you people
with
exactly.
Me, okay, I'm going to speak for myself now. It's not about the badge because we agreed that Kia has come so far from where they were. They're bringing out some fantastic products, but they aren't competing with the Germans yet. But they're at the right at that price point.
I'm calling bullshit.
We haven't driven it.
Yes.
It might be that.
So
good.
If it had a BMW badge and it looked like that, you'd be going and saying,
"Wow, this is amazing! This is great! This is the best thing
and
ever!"
And it's not a 3 Series; it's somewhere between a 3 and a 5. And look at it; it's like sort of like coupe-ish and all kinds of things like that. But because it's a Kia, you guys were judging the people that drive it.
And you know what's cool about that Kia Stinger is it? There's a sense of inverted snobbery. It's saying, "Listen, I could afford to have an equivalent BMW or Audi, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to have the Kia."
That only works for
that.
Is
it the same as the Alfa Giulia? Could it be the same?
Inverted snobbery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so, because you could have afforded to buy an M4 or an M3 for the same kind of money, same kind of performance, but you chose something left field.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But you're talking about the Giulia QV.
Yeah, Giulia QV.
So that's the really fast one.
Yeah.
But actually, you make an excellent point, because the Giulia not QV, which is not so fast, is an excellent sports
sedan. It's better than
the Kia Stinger is not an excellent sports sedan.
Well,
it's
only one of us has driven it.
So you can still be ironic and you can still be against the grain, and you can still get Alfa Romeo Giulia Veloce, for argument's sake.
Which is a 2 liter.
It's fantastic to drive and it's well built, and everybody agrees on this. Whereas the Kia's come out with a Stinger that actually isn't up to scratch.
Well, it depends who you listen to.
Well, the only professional journalist I know is Thomas.
And he hasn't driven
it. And I haven't driven it.
Well, you've driven one version, though.
I haven't.
Oh, didn't you get to drive it at all?
No.
Why did you send us pictures of it?
I drove it around the car park to take photographs on my Instagram.
So when are you getting it?
Hopefully soon.
Okay.
I think we should have a segment in future about Korea and Korean cars.
Yeah, we can.
So, guys, to wrap up, Mike, you want to end this?
So, here's the thing. So, if you're saying a car says something about you, let's throw out some real type A midlife crisis cars. What says I'm literally now trying to hold on to my youth?
Well, it has to be a convertible.
Mazda MX-5.
No
ways.
Yeah, it is.
That's never.
It's for a man.
Youthful.
It's for a man who's always wanted a sports car.
Never.
And now he's coming to some money.
But is this a midlife crisis of someone who likes and knows cars?
No. Midlife crisis car.
Ferrari California.
No, I mean, I think it's just an E-Class Cabriolet.
No, because, proper midlife. Well, the Ferrari California is an E-Class Cabriolet in different clothing.
It's a Ferrari.
It's a California.
It's got to be, it's probably going to be a convertible, and it seems like we agree it's got to have 4 seats.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to come from a sporting brand.
Because it's got to be practical.
Oh,
it's
got to
be a practical convertible.
Practical.
So E-Class convertible. E-Class convertible.
Yeah.
Ferrari California.
A5 convertible.
BMW 6 Series convertible. A5 convertible. These are all cars I like, by the way. Yeah.
What about that old Renault?
Well, you're the only person having a midlife crisis at the moment.
I'm a little bit older than 39.
Nice.
What do you think, Tom? Still an X5? No. Think more.
No, I think it can be. I think it can be a midlife crisis car.
Oh, Jaguar XKR.
Jaguar XKR.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Ooh.
That is
big
the
midlife crisis.
And on that
huge
note,
yeah.
If you're looking to exploit your comb over, Jaguar XKR convertible. That's your guy.
Agreed.
Agreed on that as well. I mean, it's a subject we could go on forever on, but we don't have time. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to have another debate on the future of the automobile. Guys, welcome back. I've got one last question for this episode. Is the car fucked?
It's a It's a question that is serious enough that it warrants swearing.
It does indeed.
I mean,
or bleeping.
And it's real. Bleeping. We had a discussion today, this week, about it, where I didn't think it was so serious, but I think it is. I think a lot of the fun's been taken out of owning a car, am I right?
The romance is gone. You know, there's that whole thing, getting into the car, going off on a long drive, going from Joburg to Cape Town, enjoying the road trip, stopping off at truck stops, enjoying a burger and a Coke, you know. People wrote songs about this whole kind of relationship between men and machine and the open road. And we kind of just feel that it's kind of burning away. It's going out with a whimper because we've got, you know, Uber, we've got low-cost airlines, we've got people saying you shouldn't own cars, you're bad, you shouldn't do it, rather take the bus. And now we've got, you know, we've got things coming up on the technology front. We've got self-driving cars and electric cars. And all of these things are just killing car culture as we know it. It's a cancer,
well,
which we can't do anything about.
I mean, let's put some context to it. So, you know, we're all varying ages. I'm 43 and a half. And, I mean, I remember going to drive-ins.
That's old.
It is quite old.
Yeah. You remember going to the drive-in. I also remember going to the drive-in.
And roadhouses. Yeah. And going on trips. I mean, I'm from Zim.
Are there any drive-ins left in...
No, I don't think so.
There's nothing.
Drive-ins?
Yeah.
I think there's Falcon one. Falcon
was the last one to go.
Yeah, which I went to the closing day.
That would have been awesome.
Which was it wasn't, because you know what they showed?
What?
They're closing down a drive-in. You've got decades of movies to play. Do you know what they played? Mr. Bones 2.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, neither do I.
A Leon Schuster movie.
Oh, I do know what that is. That's terrible.
Yeah. But I mean, roadhouses, you go and say, we did a road trip to go on holiday from Zim. We drove from Harare all the way to Cape Town. I mean, in a Datsun Sunny. And I'm saying,
great car. Yeah, I bet it didn't break down.
It was yellow. And I remember my folks only had one tape. It was ABBA. And that was it, eh? The whole way. And you know how long that is, eh? We're talking like 3 days in the car. But now the thing about it is, what got me thinking about this this week is we had a really cool evening at a roadhouse, but a proper old school roadhouse. Hmm. And they call it Josie Night Shift. It happens once a month. And it's not really a formally organized thing, but a whole lot of different car clubs, a whole lot of different WhatsApp app chats, they all merge and it just goes a little bit viral. And we had just awesome cars that came. I mean, Tom, you didn't arrive and you were quite upset because there was that Toyota
Celica.
Supra. Yeah. Toyota Supra.
Celica Supra.
Early 80s one. Yeah. Beautiful little thing. Car. And, you know, what was cool about it is that we just sat around. I ordered a fish burger and I realized afterwards that I noticed the people in the roadhouse high-five each other and I said to the waitress, has anyone ever ordered the fish burger before? She said no. So I think that they actually, like, it took them a little while to go find that piece of fish, but I digress. I mean, I survived the evening.
It was fun.
But we sat around and we talked cars, and there were guys being a bit stupid. I mean, they were doing sort of burnouts out up and down the road, and it was seriously, it was like an era that just doesn't really exist anymore.
I think what we're bemoaning with the end of cars potentially is the end of the car enthusiast as well. If you look from the bottom up now, if you're a 12, 13, 14-year-old who's looking forward, we at that stage, we were looking forward to getting our licenses.
Mm.
A car was represented freedom to us.
Yeah. Everything. Freedom.
It represented everything. Freedom.
Your personality.
It was cool. It would represent your personality.
Getting girls.
And, well, maybe for some of us. But the point is that's all, as a teenager at the moment, a 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old, really, that's... A car is irrelevant. If you're living in a big city, we've got Uber.
Because commuting
we've got,
sucks.
We don't need
yeah,
to
commuting is terrible in Joburg.
Parking is a disaster.
Commuting is a problem. Parking is a disaster. Insurance is expensive.
The roads are trash.
The roads are terrible. Everyone tells you how safe cars, unsafe cars are, and how bad for the environment they are. Your radar is completely away from cars. You can get around. You
all
can meet
you
your
want.
Friends.
Yeah. So instead of having like a Lamborghini Countach on your wall,
I was gonna say
you have a poster of an iPhone X on your wall, because that's your ticket disgusting. To everything. No. As a millennial, it is. Because everything's on here. Cars, transport, dating.
When we were kids, and I had a sister and a brother and myself, and the girls played with dolls, and the boys played with cars. What do the boys play with now?
No, they still play with cars. The problem is that I think so I mean I've got nephews, and they really identify with like a Veyron. I mean, I'm trying to change their mindset, but I mean, like
that has to be the best car, and they identify with the Countach, is the Veyron.
But the thing about it is, I think their practical exposure to cars is the commute, and the commute is just unbelievably cuck. It really is. If you think about it, like if we weren't enthusiasts, there's absolutely no way we would own a car.
Yeah,
there's absolutely no way. We would Uber everywhere.
Mm. Yeah, and where we could, some form of public transport. We definitely wouldn't do road trips. We'd rather just fly. I mean, and flights have become so cheap. Mm. So most people fly on their holidays now. No one takes a car. Well, the roads are always congested going down on holidays, but you know, it's not as nice as it used to be. There's traffic. The N3 going down to Durban is bumper to bumper.
And holes, you can't, and I mean, it's once again cameras. Controversial. You can't go and do like crazy speeds. No. I mean, there are stories of guys in the 60s, 70s who would literally drive to Durban just to go and get a burger, but just to say that they did and drove there as fast as humanly possible.
From Schlange to Northcliffe in 1997. In an Alpha GT V6 3-liter in 3 hours and 45 minutes.
That's a serious car.
Serious car, seriously fast. That's fast. You can't do it in under 6 hours now.
Yeah, like Cannonball Run.
No, but just the thing about it now is that there's just so many speed cameras, and it's not that we advocate dangerous driving. It's just that, like, there's so much restriction on like what you can do in a car now as well. I mean, let's talk a little bit about, you know, these apps where the insurers are now watching what you're doing and all that type of thing.
Yeah, how fast you're driving, what G-forces you're pulling. Yeah,
like, harsh braking.
Yeah, exactly.
I think what's happening is that if we had a one in 10,000 people was a true car enthusiast, those people are becoming less and less. Now it's probably 1 in 20,000, 1 in 50,000. The little 5-year-old that grew up looking at cars that he aspires or she aspires to, those are becoming more and more rare. I'm not saying that they're gone, but we're a dying breed, car enthusiasts, and we're dying, I think, with the internal combustion car.
Mm.
And transport has changed. The face of transport has changed, with, as we said, low cost airlines, with ride hailing apps. And I don't think that 10 or 20 years from now, the car enthusiast scene is going to be as rich or as broad. Who's going to look after our cars? Who's going to look after our cars in the next generation? Who wants them?
I'm going to be buried in mine.
But I need to ask you guys, and I'm looking specifically to Nadav and Mark, who've just been on a phenomenal tour to Europe, went to a lot of car shows and things like that.
Where did we get up to?
You also, Nadav, have been to the Speed Week in America. The question that I'm asking is, the people attending that, did it look like it's an aging crew? Because if you go and look at the number of events that there are, this is a counter to, is the car dying? That the enthusiasts, there's a whole lot more events to go to, and they're a lot more formally organized, and they really are serious. I mean, you guys saw old cars racing wheel to wheel. But the people coming to watch, did you see a generation of kids coming through? Did you see them sitting there looking at it like it's...
I think we were the youngest people there.
If I'm honest, I don't know that I noticed as many kids who would have been... Would be nice to see a much younger generation. You know, perhaps there were young kids with their parents, but what would have been nice, I think, would be to see the
20-somethings,
the sort of 15 to 25 age.
Like my age group.
Someone, the people that are growing up and are about to become car enthusiasts. And I'm not sure that I saw that demographic. It would be interesting to look at the numbers.
Because actually, I mean, I was at Le Mans, and I don't remember seeing that many kids, but I'm not sure it's that kind of event. But so the thing that made me think about that is, actually, I read an article about Nick Mason, who is the former drummer of Pink Floyd, and he owns a 250 GTO, which is widely regarded as the a Ferrari 250 GTO, which is widely regarded as the holy grail of cars.
Most expensive car ever sold.
Yeah, it's about $50 million. But his car, and the interesting, I remember the article, and it said he took the motoring journalist and was showing him his car, and he took a screwdriver and he took the front plate off, and underneath was the plate of another car, The original plates it had, and he said, "This is the car that I watched race as a kid, and I actually own that car now, and it's so special." I think his number plate is 250 GTO.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So he had the original plate that was on it, because in those days you could take that car, drive it to the track, race it.
That's what we saw happen.
And then
we
drive
were
it
very
home.
Fortunate. Mm. So are electric cars, or the cars of our generation now, exciting enough that someone would want to buy one, would want to own one, aspires to own one? I don't know. I think manufacturers are trying to make them exciting. Tesla, for example, is launching their new Roadster soon, which does 0-100 in 1 second.
Well, there's a Porsche Taycan as well. I mean, that's
Taycan.
Yeah, Tay.
Tay.
Taycan.
Tay.
Tay, like tying a knot.
Like Taiwan.
Taycan.
Sure.
Yep.
Okay.
Positively sure. But also, all these new cars, and
if he's wrong, it's at least it's documented.
Yeah. Electric cars, like, they don't really have a future, because they're basically becoming like appliances. You're not going to keep it going. You're not going to say, well,
they still give you your freedom, and they still get you where you want to go, and they're still pretty nice and techy inside, but they're not visceral, they're not tactile, you're not engaged with them.
So it's like an iPhone versus CB radio in the 70s.
Exactly, Thomas.
You know? I want that crackle and fuzz and pop and, you know.
Do you think this is something that possibly could excite, it could make things exciting? Do you think we could be moving towards the world of drone-esque commuting? And then imagine if you can hot rod one of those bad boys.
That, gentlemen, is a topic for another day.
Yeah.
We got to wrap it up, guys. Thanks for coming into the studio again today. Always good chatting.
Thanks for having us, Tom.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tom.
And catch you guys again next week.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Cool.